This session is the Zen of Holden, and my name is Dick Swanson, and we're underway. I'm glad that you came. This is in part a sort of travelogue about Holden Village from one who has only been here a week, but I could tell a story about that, and I don't need to because you come to Holden, and when you are here, you are here. And it doesn't matter how long you've been here. We're going to be practicing the very most fundamental concept of Zen. For those of you who may feel some discomfort at the idea of practicing something that you may have thought of as a non-Christian religion or something which might even be in some sense anti-Christian, I invite you to relax as best you can and trust as much as you can, because Zen in essence is not a religion. Zen is available to all of the peoples of the earth as a means of becoming much closer to the present moment, where for us Christians the I am that I am, not the I was that I was or I will be that I will be, but the I am that I am is present. And we're going to, come on in, we're going to begin with a basic Zen practice. Do we have one more? There's some chairs right back there. You may have a picture in your mind of a Zen Buddhist monk sitting in the lotus position, his legs pulled back up over his ears or something like that, and sitting as though he has moved into a whole different continuum of space and time. I would suggest that you simply embrace that picture, love it, and say goodbye to it, because it's not at all what we're going to be doing. We're going to be practicing just plain old everyday Zen that people like us in America can practice anytime and anywhere. But notice that it's called practice. Spirituality is, in essence, a discipline. It is not something that just happens. You don't just sit back and wait to be struck by God. You can do that. But spirituality has form to it. And it has with it, if you will, a technology. We're comfortable with technology as a term in our time, although we may be on the cusp of a new age which is not quite so comfortable with the word, considering where it's leading us. But spirituality has a technology, and Zen is a spiritual technology. It is, and we're going to practice it, I think, in probably its most simple form, a way of coming into the present moment. I like to call what we're doing practicing the present, and defining present in two ways: the present moment, and also the present as that which is given as gift from God, which is the present moment with all thereto appertaining. So we're going to practice. It's called seshin in Zen. Practice. We'll just call it practice. It can also be called sitting. Just, and that's what it's called in oftentimes in Zen. So we're going to sit for 5 minutes, and we're going to use a technology. I don't ask you or require of you that you participate fully. You may do as you wish, but I ask only one thing always, and that is that during our practice, you close your eyes for a couple of reasons. It reduces some visual distraction. There are many other distractions, reduces that, and also it allows you to be free from feeling that someone is watching you. There may be times as the leader of the practice that I will have to have my eyes open to watch the clock, to make sure where we are, but once we start, my eyes are coming down and I will not be looking at you until our practice is over and our eyes are open. So nobody in this room is going to be watching anybody else. Even if you want to just simply sit here and sleep. And incidentally, should you during this 5 minutes or later sleep, that's quite all right. It may be one of the most usual occurrences in practice is to hear someone begin to snore. And if you feel like laughing, that's okay, but you'll find that it helps to just simply thank God for that part of the music of the earth. It is part of the music of the earth. It's one of our sounds. So, if you fall asleep, then sleep well, and you will wake up when the practice is over. I assure you of that. Okay? So there's no right way. We're not going to assume a lotus position. You don't have to have both feet flat on the floor. You don't have to have your palms up. What I want you to do is wiggle enough so that you are comfortable where you are, and then begin to become quiet and close your eyes. Come on in. There's one seat right here. Go ahead and take it because you'll be more comfortable. That's all right. Well, I just might guess that you will be. I'm not sure, but we'll see. No offense intended. All right, if you'll close your eyes, wiggle around a little bit, get situated in the position that you feel you can hold for 5 minutes, and I'll tell you when that 5 minutes will start. What we're going to do is simply become aware of our breathing. Listen and feel breathing as breath comes in and breath goes out. Do not alter your breathing pattern. Just breathe naturally and be with your breathing. Pay attention to your breathing. Wake up to your breathing. You will discover distractions. Do not fight them. Just simply thank God for them. A thought occurs. A worry occurs. A physical sensation. Discomfort of the chair, of the back of the chair. An itch. An ache. Simply thank God for it, let it be, and then come back to your breathing. With each distraction, note it, be fully aware of it, thank God for it, and come back to your breathing. This is practice. Don't be looking for anything. Allow everything to be for 5 minutes, beginning now. All right, that ends this practice. And allow your eyes to open as they will. The practice of awareness, the practice of attention to breathing, is practice for practice. One of the great Zen teachings is, when doing the dishes, do the dishes. There is the wonderful rabbi story. Two Jewish people are talking about their rabbis. One says, "My rabbi is so wondrous that he can fly." And the other, stymied for a moment, thinks and says, "Well, that's really impressive. As for my rabbi, when he sits, he sits. And when he eats, he eats. And when he walks, he walks." The principle behind practice is to discipline our awareness so that when we are walking across the street, we do not arrive on the other side of the street without having been crossing the street. Any reactions to your 5 minutes? Any reaction? Pardon?
I didn't want to, you know, you said let your eyes open as they will. Mine just said, no, we can stay here for a while.
Okay.
It's very comfortable.
Did you find yourself aware of nothing at all?
I found that I chatter within myself.
Aha, so do I. That's really helpful, you see, to hear that, because we all chatter. One can hear Barbara in the next room. Whenever I would open my eyes to check the time, I would see my book, my pencil, and so forth. So what I had to do was to say thank you for all of that, which was a lot of chatter, and come back to my breathing. And that happens inside. It's just like there's a movie screen that's just going, and a soundtrack too, with another dimension, which is feeling, and the feelings coming. Other reactions? Don't have to... Pardon?
I can't get my hand up. I can barely
laugh. I found about a zillion things to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Remember your first time?
Yeah.
You had a real sense of silence and a sort of an emptiness there. You weren't distracted. You were just quiet. I remember your comment. An alcoholic once asked the master, "What are the benefits of spirituality?" And the master said, "Non-alcoholic intoxication." That's your experience. Jan?
I would like to know if anyone else experiences these flashes from memory. I'm having especially flashes from trips I've taken in recent years. I'll be in Assisi or in Tel Aviv. I mean, I'm not thinking in a pattern that would, because I'm trying I'm just aware of my breathing and in the present as much as possible, but why do these flashes of place come in?
Would anyone like to address that? I'll take a shot at it. It was Viktor Frankl that said the past has future. Having been is a form of being. So that all of that which has been entered into us as though we were computers is there, and it comes. That's my shot at it.
I think Assisi comes because it was a very mystical place for me. And this is a mystical experience that I can't explain the other side.
Does she need to explain it? Okay. There's no judgment that goes on in this. A couple of stories. Stories from Anthony DeMello, Jesuit, died in 1987, spiritual master of spiritual masters. One of his books I had ordered in the bookstore, and it is long gone. But you can check with me as for the name and the basic text, and you can do awareness things yourself very easily, or in a group, or maybe with your family. It works okay with children. A story. Don't look for God, the master said, just look, and all will be revealed. But how is one to look? Each time you look at anything, the master said, see only what is there and nothing else. The disciples were bewildered, so the master made it simpler. For instance, when you look at the moon, see the moon and nothing else. What else could one see except the moon when one looks at the moon? A hungry person could see a ball of cheese. A lover, the face of her beloved. Where shall I look for enlightenment? One asked the master. Here. When will it happen? It is happening right now. Then why don't I experience it? Because you do not look. What should I look for? Nothing. Just look. At what? Anything your eyes alight upon. Must I look in a special kind of way? No. The ordinary way will do. But don't I always look the ordinary way? No. Why ever not? Because to look, you must be here. You're mostly somewhere else. And one more, and we'll continue our Zen of Holden. The master was an advocate both of learning and of wisdom. Learning, he said, when asked, is gotten by reading books or listening to lectures. And wisdom? By reading the book that is you. He added as an afterthought, not an easy task at all, for every minute of the day brings a new edition of the book. All of the things going on in us, the book is constantly new. The Zen of Holden. I would simply like to try some images and share them with you. Things that you might have in mind a few minutes from now when we do a Holden exercise. Things you might have in mind as you go through your day at Holden. One of the things to do at Holden is to watch the mountains. I suggest as a wrinkle on watching the mountains, experience the mountain watching you. Find a place where Buckskin Mountain or Copper Mountain can see you and let yourself just be there and allow yourself to be viewed by the mountain, which has among its other capacities that of praising God. And ask the mountain, what do you see in me? Who am I in your eyes? You can do that when you're hiking. Let the mountain watch you hike. You can do it in the jacuzzi. Face the right direction. Of course, don't forget to wear a bathing suit. The mountain is modest. Another thing that's such a wondrous thing to do here is to watch the deer. Try to put yourself in a position and allow the deer to watch you. What does the deer see? And add a variation to that. When the deer is watching you, is the deer watching itself watching you, or is it simply watching you? You see, when we watch, we also watch ourselves watching. I'll never forget the night at Shipstad's and Johnson's Ice Follies in the Chicago Stadium in Chicago. And I stood up, I was way up in the upper balcony. Lorraine and I were there with members of the congregation we were part of at that time. And something just uproariously funny happened on the ice. You know, the clown trips or falls or something like that happened. And I just started laughing. And then I realized that I was watching myself laughing. And it seemed as though I lost something in that. And only now is it beginning to come to me that there is nothing wrong with watching ourselves watching, because that is where we are in our species of the earth. You see, we have consciousness, and it is a gift which evolution is imposing and conferring upon us so that we can watch ourselves watching. And we can curve that back so that we can say what we see and share what we see to the rest of creation. Creation needs to know what we know for the best, that we are all one and that we are to sustain ourselves together. We need to share that message with the earth. So our consciousness of being conscious is a gift and not something to be disturbed about. So the next time you're in a conversation and suddenly you're losing track because you're conversing with yourself about the conversing you are doing with this other person, just say, thank you, God. It's like our practice. Thank you, God. Be aware of it. What does it tell you? And let it be. Two more little stories before we go on with examples of Zen at Holden. The master would often say that silence alone brought transformation, but no one could get him to define what silence was. When asked, he would laugh, then hold his forefinger up against his tightened lips, which only increased the bewilderment of his disciples. One day there was a breakthrough when someone asked, and how is one to arrive at this silence that you speak of? The master said something so simple that his disciples studied his face for a sign that he might be joking. He wasn't. He said, wherever you may be, look when there is apparently nothing to see. Listen when all is seemingly quiet. That's why we miss the process of actually crossing the street, because what we're looking to is to get to the other side. And in the crossing of the street, there is nothing to see. There is nothing to hear. That's what we think. So look when there is nothing to see, apparently, and listen when apparently there is nothing to hear.
I'd like to take that literally for my children and say that there might be a car coming. And I've said that so many times. And so many times I've seen them run across without looking, even though we've talked about it and talked about it.
A very good point. That's crucial awareness. Thank you. And one last story from 1 Minute Wisdom. This was the first of Anthony DeMello's books of little stories. It's just full of little stories like this. This is called Spirituality. Even though it was the master's day of silence, a traveler begged for a word of wisdom that would guide him through life's journey. The master nodded affably, took a sheet of paper, and wrote a single word on it: awareness. The visitor was perplexed. That's too brief. Would you please expand on it a bit? The master took the paper back and wrote, awareness, awareness, awareness. But what do these words mean? Said the stranger helplessly. The master reached for the paper and wrote, awareness, awareness, awareness means awareness. the Zen of Holden. Consider names. What a wonderfully tricky thing Holden does to us. You go to a convention, and what's the first thing you get? About an 8,000-page computer printout with the names of everybody who's there and where they're from, and sometimes even their degrees. And so then sometimes you sit there and you start checking off, well, I've met this person from San Francisco, and I've met this person from DeKalb, Illinois, and so on and so forth. Zen at Holden is not doing that. How do you find out a name? You ask. You just ask. And a practice of Zen is to be aware of that name. Maybe you'll need to write it down. Maybe you'll need to ask it again. I think one of the inner rules, which I haven't heard spoken yet at Holden, is that it is all right to ask a person his or her name 999 times. It's okay, but that's the point. One could take that a variation and to say, look at the people of Holden. One of the wonderful experiences at Holden is watching a child watching a deer, and watching oneself watching a child watching the deer. The child is probably not quite as far along in watching itself, herself, himself watch as we are. We get a little more developed at that point. The child just simply looks. The child darts for the bird, reaches out for the chipmunk, goes to the deer, even speaks to the bird or the chipmunk or the deer. And laughter. And the final little thing that I see as a Zen experience at Holden is to participate in the comings and goings of Holden. I am sorry that in my first week I wasn't fully sensitive to one of the beautiful parts of the liturgy here, and that is the watching and the welcoming of those coming and the watching and the goodbying of those going. And to allow that experience to become part of your spiritual journey here as we see the continual ebb and flow of life. It's happening in our congregations, it's happening in our communities, it's happening even in the homes that we live in as children come and children go, friendships come, friendships go, it happens in our work. And here at Holden, it becomes like a daily living and breathing. And if you watch, you will see the Zen masters, someone said it was okay not to say Zen mistresses, the Zen masters at the bus saying hello and saying goodbye. Part of the Zen of Holden. Anybody need to get anything out before we go on? Because we're going to take a journey through Holden now in just a few minutes, and that's going to take a few minutes. Anybody got something that's just sort of pushing up and you'd like to get out before we go further? Yes.
In your example of experiencing crossing the street and be there in the crossing,
one step at a time. One moment at a time.
I've sort of been interested in that too, because I find here at Holden during the summer, life does become very slowed down in that you have to stay warm. And yet, it becomes very difficult when you plan for the future at the same time. Make it a broader aspect of it. So I guess
plan for it?
For opportunities, so you're being responsible for trying to see which way it goes, but just preparing.
Plan for it? Whatever's going to happen in Narnia this afternoon, or a week from now, or 4th of July tomorrow, plan for it. Be fully awake to it. Be thankful for it, but don't live it. You can't live it, because it is not yet. Our life is a continual movement from that which is no more to that which is not yet. We can remember, we say that, we remember that which is no more, and we plan for and hope for that which is not yet. But we must come into the present moment in order to live. That's wonderful. Tell us his name.
Stuart McDonald.
And he is where?
Washington, which is a little part out of Longview, Washington.
And would you say it again? Life?
Life is what happens when you have other plans.
Sheldon Kopp, one of the great storytellers of our time, says that interruption is not antithetical to life. Life is interruption. I hear some of the same thing between what your pastor is saying and what he is saying. Let's go on. What I'd like you to do is to take a journey through Holden. It will be your journey. And we're going to do it by entering it through our breathing, so that we can also use breathing as a way of simply centering and then moving out of our center into a journey through Holden. Your Holden. Go wherever you wish, and you can move in any kind of time, space, energy, mass, continuum you want to. If you want to float up to the top of the mountain, as Doug Dolstad had us do last week, and watch Holden, you can. If you want to go rushing down Railroad Creek, you can do that. If you want to try to be in Holden in 1962 when Jerry Swanson and Jan Bowman spent their honeymoon here, sometimes I have a real difficulty picturing a honeymoon here, but they were, so did they. If you want to go back in time, even a time when you weren't here, and try to imagine what it was like. Or maybe you'd like to just sort of journey out into what Holden will become and see what you see. That'd be an interesting thing to hear Doris Edmond say, traveling off into the future, what she thinks Holden will become. But, all right, I'd like to, first of all, ask only, or require, I think, only, that you close your eyes. Because we want you to have complete privacy in this exercise. So close your eyes and do the wiggling that you need to do in order to get comfortable, because this time we're going to spend 10 minutes. Can you imagine spending 10 minutes at Holden? In case we didn't do it in this 10 minutes, we'd still be 10 minutes at Holden, so what difference does it make, right? We're going to spend 10 minutes, though, in this inner journey at Holden. So, and incidentally, if you're not comfortable closing your eyes, one of the ways of doing practice is to let your eyes be half open and looking down. Some people find that more comfortable. If that's the case, just look down and let your eyes be half open. That's okay. And when your eyes are comfortable, and when you're comfortable wherever you are seated, you're in a comfortable, quiet posture, then begin with your breathing to enter into your Holden journey. Let your breathing become your steps, or your floating, or your flying. But just now, initially, come to your breathing. Let your breathing come to you. Be one with your breathing. Remember, one of the things that people do at Holden is they sleep, and that's okay. One can dream at Holden in their sleep. Simply be with your breathing. Picture yourself in gentle, sweeping steps. And begin, or perhaps that's not the word, allow the Holden images to arise. And whenever any kind of distraction, interruption, whatever occurs, simply be thankful for it, and then return to your breathing your way through Holden. Whatever comes, simply make a note. Examine. Be aware. Stay with it if you wish, or move on. Thank you. begin now to say goodbye to this Holden in the heart that we've been visiting, and a few last embraces, and then as you're ready, allow your eyes to open and come back into Koinonia dining room. Sometimes it helps to wiggle after 10 minutes like that. Well, where'd you go? What'd you see? What'd you do? Any reports? Quick? Yes.
I'm very apprehensive about heights, and so I was able, in my mind, to go to the top of Buckskin Mountain without having to be, I've been just physically able to go there. It was a very nice experience to be able to look down the deer.
Page 1.
How did you get there?
I just kind of walked up the mountain very gently.
Okay. Page 2.
Spent a lot of time sitting on the lawn out there talking to the deer.
Did you?
Yeah. Right inside the building.
Thank you. Page 3. Doris?
Well, I've noticed from the first we came that Holden has grown because of the individuals who come and see a need and then fill that need. And I have hopes that from now on, as it has been in the past, there's no reason why it shouldn't continue, that when people see that Holden needs something, they will supply it, whether it be a service or a thing or something they feel is necessary here to do something about it themselves, rather than complain and say, well, too bad they don't have this, or too bad they don't have that.
Okay. I sense, if I am not, I don't wish to be overly personal or prying, but I suspect that in your journey you were seeing Holden at a time when you won't be here.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Page 4.
I didn't see any scenery, I just saw people.
Did you?
I saw a calypso orchid that...
You saw what?
A calypso orchid that was shared with me by Ruth Munson earlier in the season, and then I saw the tailings, and they felt like a specter.
John?
Deer and cats in the lot of times, fishing and stuff.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, John.
Oh, I've been spending a lot of time fishing. So
you went fishing?
Yeah.
Did you catch anything? Did you? Maybe that's the kind of fishing that I should start doing.
Yeah.
Page 6.
I went between the munching with the deer.
Did you?
Are
you the one who...
Luigi and David live in the same chalet with Jerry and Jan and Lorraine and I and their two children. And the other night I was in bed and I heard very quiet but hard out on the porch. And I let it go. I thought that it was the East German flag maybe flapping in the breeze out there. Guess what? The deer came up on the porch of the chalet, mowed down the petunias, and then left. And last night they got the chalet across from us. Page 7 or 8, where are we? Yes.
I was feeling my heels sink down in the gym, that one stand back there, mm-hmm. and just feeling how pleasant that was to be cushioned by the earth when you walk.
Oh.
When I initially thought of the calendar, I thought of the scars on the earth were from Minnesota, and there's the taconite tailings on earth in Minnesota.
found myself going back to last night, which was a very moving experience for me, because I heard my brother preach for the first time. And we've both been pastors for many, many years, but never anywhere where I was able to hear him preach. And I was in touch with some deep sadness in that. I mean, just to be there and hear this person who's been preaching all of his life, and I've always been on the outside of that. And it was very moving. I felt tearful in my journey through Holden, and I felt tearful last night. Tears of real gratitude. I'll always see God eternally on the birthing table, Jerry. Last page. Don't be afraid. Everyone has a right to the last page. Stories. Here is a parable that the Lord Buddha told his disciples. A man came across a tiger in a field. The tiger gave chase and the man fled. He came upon a precipice, stumbled, and began to fall. Then he reached out and caught hold of a little strawberry bush that was growing along the side of the precipice. There he hung for some minutes, suspended between the hungry tiger above and the deep chasm below, where he was soon going to meet his death. Suddenly he spied a luscious strawberry growing on the bush, and grasping the bush with one hand, he plucked the strawberry with the other and put it into his mouth. Never in his life had a strawberry tasted so sweet. To which DeMello adds, to the enlightened, the awareness of death gives sweetness to life. And then related to it, the nervous tourist was afraid to get too close to the cliff. What would I do, she said to the guide, if I fell over the edge? In that case, madam, said the guide enthusiastically, don't fail to look to the right. You'll love the view. And one that I think can come home. A young American got a clerical job at the White House and had just participated in a reception given to all White House staffers by the president. She thought her mother would be thrilled to get a call from the White House, so she placed a call through the White House switchboard. Mother, she said proudly, this is a big day for me. You know what? I am calling you from the White House. The response she got from the other end was not quite as excited as she had expected it to be. Toward the end of the conversation, her mother said, well, daughter, it's been a big day for me too. Really? What happened? I finally managed to clean out the attic. We went hiking down the Railroad Creek Trail the other day to Lucerne, and the whole way down, I knew what I wanted to find. I wanted to find a stone. And I decided that I would know the stone when the stone came. And just as we got to the bottom, I had been watching all along, noticing for the first time that all of the stones higher up here in the Railroad Creek Valley are very angular and jagged, not very rounded. They haven't gone down as far. They haven't been washed by the rains and the streams and the waterfalls and so forth as much as the ones that are down closer to the lake. We're walking along, and I had just about decided I'm not going to find a stone, at least not on this trip, and I found this stone just sort of half buried, but this was the part that I could see. And when I dug it out and looked at it, I could see what looked like a circle that went all the way around it, like a circumference or a hemisphere or an equator. And so I washed it off, and I found out this was the Holden Stone. It came to me. Then I started thinking, Holden Stone, Holden Stone. I've had a rubbing stone that I picked up on the shores of the North Atlantic years and years ago, which I usually carry in my pocket, and sometimes when I get a little bit tense, I'll take it and I'll just rub it. And I thought, finger stones, rubbing stones. How about a Holden stone? Pardon the pun. But I would recommend that if nothing else, you find yourself, before you go, a Holden stone. And what I want to do, and it may be that someone will give you a Holden stone, or it may be that you will find a stone and you will give someone a Holden stone as a means of connecting with this place. So that should you ever want to travel here again, you just take your Holden stone and hold it and close your eyes and you're here. It's a connector. Well, I'd like you just to look at this Holden stone, and I'd like to read you just a tiny little prayer by Mechthild of Magdeburg, a Dominican sister in the 13th century, whose spirituality very strongly influenced Meister Eckhart and Dante and many others. One day I saw with the eyes of my eternity, in bliss and without effort, a stone. This stone was like a great mountain and was of assorted colors. It tasted sweet like heavenly herbs. I asked the sweet stone, "Who are you?" And it replied, "I am Jesus." For our closer, slightly paraphrased, Genesis 1:31, the first part of the verse, "And God the Creator saw all that had been made, and behold, it was very good." Thank you for coming. It's 10 minutes of time. It's almost like you could get it apart, isn't it?
Even has her, like, right here. It's a split right there.
Yep, looks like it.
See, right there, there are two.
I lived there for about 5 years. My
That's kind of a neat stone, don't you think? I'm going to take that home and I'm going to... I'll even remember.
No.
You touched that, Jen.
It's sort of like... you just take off the top and you put stuff in there.
Well, who knows? Maybe there's something inside.
I don't know.
Where are you from? We should go find our own home. I have that one book I bought.
I saw you running this morning and walking. Where are you from?
You never really possess them. You really hold them for a while.
The basic exercise is entered as S-A-D, like sad, H-A-N-A, all one word. It looks like sad, N-A, N as in nurse, N-A. And it looks like it would be pronounced sadhana, but it's sadhana. So your accent is on the sadhana, like the H isn't even there. And the author is Anthony Small D-E,